Thanks for joining us on your Friday. Welcome to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media. I'm Anthony Murnau. Over the next hour, we will talk about wellness and how to reach your goals this year with Dr. Raquel Garzon, who will answer your questions during the next hour. You can also join in the conversation on our Facebook page. If you want to call in during the next hour, the number is 575-646-2212. Be Well with Raquel, brought to you by Oregon Mountain Solar and Amador Health Center. Six minutes after 1 o'clock. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us right here on KRWG Public Media. I'm Anthony Murnau. Welcome to Be Well with Raquel. We are going to be talking about wellness this hour, and we want to hear from you. I'll give you the number right now so you can call in. The number is 575-646-2212 to call in and ask your questions to Dr. Raquel Garzon, who is joining us this hour. She is president and founder of Revitalize Project and author of the book, The Business of You, Leveraging Business Principles to Thrive in Life. Dr. Garzon is an author, speaker, and thought leader, and she speaks to many different businesses and athletes around the world in her work. She has a doctor of health science with a concentration in global health from Nova Southeastern University. And in her doctoral studies, she focused her efforts in neuroscience and its impact on behaviors and behavior change. Dr. Garzon also holds a Bachelor of Science degree in nutrition from the University of Florida and a Master of Science degree in nutrition from Texas A&M University. She's a registered dietitian, certified personal trainer, and certified mental health integrative medicine provider. And you can learn more about her work at revitalizeproject.com. Dr. Garzon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Anthony. I'm super excited. I've known you for so long. You've never interviewed me before.
I can't believe it. I can't believe that, too. We've known each other for several years. Now, your work focuses on wellness and well-being. So let's just start off with talking about that. What are the principles that really make up wellness and well-being?
So obviously, I talk about the more physical aspects that a lot of people are interested in. So I talk about nutrition, exercise, and sleep. Sleep is a real big one. And then I have this bucket around stress. But what that actually means is I talk about emotional well-being and strategies, as well as mental well-being and strategies. And it sounds the same, but they're not exactly the same. So
Well, we can dive into that and talk about that. Now, I'm glad you talked about, you know, mental strategies. We're at a time of the year where many people are trying to make their goals for the year and implement them this year. Something was a little bit different this year because I noticed on social media a lot of people were sort of backlashing the whole new year, new me mentality that you often see on social media. People were like, I don't want to hear that. It's a new year, but we're still dealing with the same old pandemic and challenges that we faced the last couple years. So with that mindset, what are some things that we can do, you think, to kind of forge ahead and stay focused on our goals?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. First of all, I was super happy to see the backlash on the new year, new me, because I'm always talking about that, like nothing has changed since yesterday, right? Unless you have changed your entire mindset and all of these sorts of things. But, you know, to really, and I think the reason there's this backlash is that people are realizing that, you know, under the conditions of COVID, we've really realized that we're under a lot of stress, see change and uncertainty, and sort of this unknown is just this nagging feeling to have. And it really takes a toll on us. And so just because it's a new year and it's a new calendar year, and by the way, today is actually New Year's Day in the Julian calendar, if we were still using that. But
well, Happy New Year.
The idea is the same. Nothing's changed since yesterday, right? And so why would we have this expectation that everything's going to be different? And I think that's the main thing, is that why create expectations that are just going to make us feel frustrated, you know, in the end. And so, you ask this great question, what can we do? And so, here's based on the research and based on how our human system works, especially under conditions that we're in right now of uncertainty, of ambiguity, of constant change and shifting, is that you really want to be very clear on how you want to show up. Let's just start there. How do I want to show up every single day, knowing myself, knowing what I want out of life? How do I want to show up when things are good? How do I want to show up when things are not so great? How do I want to show up to my family, to my friends, to the people that I work with, to people that I don't even know? Because everything that we do and how we interact has impacts, right? It has impacts on ourselves and it has impacts on others. And when we can figure that out, then we can start to look at what's going to help me to do that better. So could sleeping more help me in this, you know, in this situation and how I want to show up every single day? Because we know that when we don't get enough sleep, it's hard to show up maybe in a positive mood, or it's hard to have a conversation that might be border on the line of conflict and have that be as productive as if we've gotten a good night's sleep. So I think this notion, which I call purpose, but it's basically who you want to be and how you want to show up, can really guide shifts and changes that we want to make, including in wellness, including in our health. Okay. But if you don't know what to do, like how to get to that, it is hard. So,
well, it is a difficult time for many people. We're trying to live our lives in this pandemic. It doesn't appear to be going away anytime soon. COVID-19 has claimed many lives, many Americans, many people's lives across the globe. Many people know people who have lost their lives to COVID-19 or have been, face severe illness with it or long-term illnesses. You've had personal experience with this as well. I saw on your social media account and your Instagram account that you had a fight with COVID this past fall.
I did. And so did my son and my husband as well.
Going through that experience, you have all this training, but when something like that really hits you and it's something that you've never dealt with before, a different illness, what were some of the things that you found really challenging to deal with?
I think for me, it's always challenging to not feel in control. And I think that that is part of what makes COVID hard for everybody or for a lot of people, is that we like to feel like we are in control of what we're doing, what we're not doing, where we go, where we don't go. You know, a lot of our routines, we depend on familiarity and sort of the known to stay in a thriving zone. And when you don't feel like you're in control of your body, when you don't feel like you're in control of where you can go or how you can see your friends or do business, it is very hard. And it produces anger and it produces frustration. And for some people, it takes you into fight or flight zones. So what we see is a lot of this. You know, anytime you lose autonomy, my decision-making process, someone's making decisions for me, or my body's making decisions for me, like you're really tired and you can't go mountain biking or hiking or do all the things that you normally do, it induces for some people a fight or flight response. And that's normal. So I just want to put it out there first that one of the things I try to do is normalize this idea that what you're feeling, if you're feeling angry and frustrated, if you're feeling tired and complacent and just like you feel a despair and giving up, let me just tell you that that is a normal human response. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not flawed. You're not broken. Nothing along those lines. But we don't want to stay there. And so that's where the strategies come into play. I'm very lucky and blessed that I teach this and that I have all of this training, because what I did when I was laying in bed and I was so tired that I couldn't get out of bed is that I learned basket weaving and I made a bunch of baskets that I was able to give away during Christmas to people. And they looked really nice. And so I never even thought I could do something like that. So I try to create restructuring in my mind. You know, I have all of these methods and it was still hard for me. But not everybody has those methods, because these are not things that are typically taught in school. We have to find these methods on our own, and that's really hard to do.
I want to give the number really quick. If you have a question for Dr. Raquel Garcon about wellness, 575-646 2212 is the number to call. You can also join in our conversation on our Facebook page if you have a question. I want to move on and talk about, well, I kind of want to talk about something you mentioned, that fight or flight mode, that survival mode that is kind of ingrained in us. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that and how we could kind of be more aware of when we're in those situations, mm-hmm. you know, how we can make the best decisions?
Yeah. So first we go into fight or flight when the system detects that it needs to take action and or because something's being threatened. So I want to start there because we tend to think about things like I'm about to be in a car accident or something bad is about to happen to me. But we go into fight or flight anytime that we have not rested or slept enough. The system perceives that as a threat. Anytime that we feel excluded. Anytime that we feel like we don't have connection with people. So inclusion and belonging and being part of a social group is super important to prevent fight or flight. Feeling like you're cared about, feeling like you provide value, feeling like you have impact. Those are all things that if you don't feel or one of those needs is unmet, can cause us to go into fight or flight. Now, some of us go into fight or flight so often and for so long that it becomes our normal. And we do not actually know that we are in fight or flight. And some of the symptoms of that are I'm constantly busy. I have no space in my calendar. I'm overflowing with so much that I'm constantly multitasking. I'm scrambling. I can't prioritize. I'm dropping the ball on things. And we begin to think that it's just because I'm really busy. A lot of people are depending on me. Yeah. I'm an important person, whatever that looks like. I have a lot of responsibility. And what we don't realize is that oftentimes this is actually a sign that you're in fight or flight.
So
we just normalize it.
So how do we get ourselves out of that moment while we're in the fight or flight? What are some tools we can use or some things we could practice and recognize or try to get us out of that?
It's anything that calms and anything that causes a relaxation response for you. And so a lot of what I train people on is, first of all, recognizing for you, what are the signs of fight or flight? For me, one of the biggest things is feeling cold when it's really not cold. And I know it's such a bizarre thing, but every time you're in fight or flight, there's something in your body that's showing up. If you have frequent headaches, stomach aches, tension in your muscles, lower back pain, we tend to associate that with conditions and health. A lot of times it is associated with actually what's going on in our lives emotionally and mentally. So recognizing and then having ways to calm and relax that are productive. So our system might find other ways of calming, like eating a gallon of ice cream, compulsive shopping online, you know, things that create instantaneous pleasure, but really have some costs that go with it. So you want to find productive ways to calm and relax the system.
You're listening to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media. If you have a question for Dr. Raquel Garzon, the number to call is 575-646-2212. Again, the number 575-646-2212, or you can ask your question on our Facebook page, and that'll get forwarded to us during this conversation. We have about 40 minutes left on the program, and we want to hear from you. What are some things that you're dealing with right now during this pandemic? Have you set goals for yourself this year to obtain? Are you concerned about how you're going to reach them? Call in, ask Dr. Raquel Garzon, and we'll get you through. So I want to bring up something that has made a lot of news in the past year, and that is the Great Resignation. There are a lot of folks who have said, you know, this job is not worth my time. It's time for me to move on to something that is better for me and that suits me and makes me happy. What are your thoughts on the Great Resignation, and what do you see is what do you think is going on right now in our workplace and society?
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely thrilled by it. Second of all, I feel like it's necessary. I try to look at the silver lining. Obviously, that's part of my training. And I think that COVID's here, whether we want it or not. And I think this is one of the good things that's going to come out of COVID. I've been talking to organizations and corporations for years around how you create a culture in which people want to be there because they want to be there, not because they feel like they don't have any other options, not because they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm trapped and, you know, like this is the only way I can make it through life and I'm just going to chug away a day at a time until my retirement. That is not a motivating way to get through life. But yet organizations create cultures that way, not intentionally, but there are things that they're doing that continue to you know, communicate those messages. And what has happened is that COVID has exposed this. The emperor has no clothes. I wrote a blog on the Great Resignation. People are realizing that these needs that I just mentioned are not being met. I don't feel included. I don't feel like I belong. I don't feel cared about as a person. I feel like a number. I don't feel valued. I don't feel this is a place that I can grow. And I don't feel like this is a place I can have impact. And those are human needs. And because we spend more time at work typically than we do anywhere else, an organization is responsible for creating a culture in which people feel included, cared about, belong, they're valued, they can have impact and grow. And that's just plain and simple. And so people need to have this movement because it will begin to force leaders and organizations to create those cultures.
Well, we'll see how this unfolds as this pandemic continues. One of the things with the pandemic in the workplace is that a lot of people are working from home. And some people have enjoyed it. Others may not like it. They're not getting that social interaction. But there's also some research out there that shows that when we work from home, some people are working too much. It's too easy to walk around with the laptop or the phone where you can be reached. What are your thoughts on this if you're in that situation and you want to make sure you have a healthy work environment when you're working from home?
Yeah. And obviously, this is a lot of the work that I do. I mean, first of all, I just want to say that people should have as much autonomy as a job can possibly allow. You know, so if people can actually do their jobs from home, they should be able to and choose when they do that and when they work and how they work. All of those sorts of things. That's another thing that I do. If you happen to work from home and you find yourself falling into this, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's not what you want. So let me preface this that some people work 12 hours a day and they like it and they choose to do that and they're getting something from it because it is meeting these needs. That's different. I think that when we feel like some need is unmet, that's where we have resentment about it, or we feel like we don't have the strategies for it. I think once again, it's knowing yourself, trusting yourself, and expressing yourself. And part of what I find is that people overwork unintentionally because maybe they don't have the ability to say no or set boundaries. They haven't created routines for themselves. Nobody's asking them to do it, but there's this assumption that if I'm at home, maybe it's going to look like I'm not working, so I'm overcompensating. A lot of this is created by ourselves in our own minds. And so it's check in with yourself. What is the real truth? What's your truth here? And then I can't give like a blanket statement, but that is just something really important to do. What are you missing out on? What are the costs? How can you work that in? You know, there's just so much. I mean, this is like a 4-hour segment, Anthony, just on this topic, but yeah. You can't neglect yourself. You can't neglect important parts of your life, and you have to create routines like anything else. We all create routines to make our lives work. And I think it's a matter of creating routines in a new place to make that work for you.
Has your workplace changed during the pandemic? You can give a call and share it with us if you like, 575-646-2212. Do you have concerns about that and how it's affecting you? The number to call, 575-646-2212. You can share your comments with us. You can also share your questions about anything wellness this afternoon that we're talking about. So this is something that I think is going to be really interesting to see how we respond as a society, not only businesses, corporations, but entrepreneurs as well. I know that, you know, one thing that I've seen is this creativity from entrepreneurs during this moment of the pandemic, where they've used things like social media to kind of launch themselves into a whole new career field. Your thoughts on the opportunities that we have right now?
Of course, because I try to look at the positive. I think this is a huge opportunity for innovation, not just like you mentioned in corporations or systems or even healthcare and how we're doing things, but I think it's an opportunity for us to reinvent and innovate ourselves as people in that process. You know, it's a time to really sit with this. You know, sometimes we want to distract ourselves and sometimes we need that. But to really sit with this and say, what am I learning about myself in this setting under these conditions that I can use to now do something better? So that's why I say that when we have this opportunity to work from home and we've not done it before, it's an opportunity to reinvent how you work, how you establish balance for yourself, how you establish stillness and quiet and creative space. A connection in new ways that perhaps you've never tried before, basket weaving when you have COVID or whatever that might be. I think there's a great opportunity for us to reinvent ourselves without being placed in a box. And I think that's really, really important also. I don't believe in boxes, not checking them, not being in them, none of those. I don't believe in boxes at all. And so go outside of what other people have told you or what you can and cannot do and look within yourself and let yourself guide you. Let your inner wisdom guide you versus letting the outside world tell you what you can and cannot do. I think it's a perfect time to do that.
You're listening to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media, brought to you by Oregon Mountain Solar and Amador Health Center. The number to call to ask your question or share your comment is 575-646-2212. We're talking about wellness this hour, and we do have a caller on the line right now. We're getting ready to go to Linda. Linda, thank you so much for joining us here on Be Well with Raquel. Do you have a question? Linda, are you there?
Oh.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hello?
Hello, Linda. Can you hear us? You might want to turn off your radio, and maybe that'll help.
Hello?
Linda, are you there?
I can hear you over the radio, but not on my phone.
Okay. Well, we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you, so if you want to ask your question for Raquel. Okay, do we still have Linda?
Well, I'm trying to switch to a anti-inflammatory diet for leg pain. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Okay, so...
And I keep getting different information about like things like coffee's good or coffee's bad.
Okay, so... Raquel, you got the, you know, what Linda's
or
trying to ask.
Dairy is good or dairy is bad. And I wondered if there was a good resource for me.
Okay.
Yes. Great.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you. So the anti-inflammatory diet has a special place in my heart. So thank you for asking that question, Linda. And it's so confusing. Even as I'm a registered dietitian, I have lupus, which is an inflammatory autoimmune disease. And there are protocols out there for anti-inflammatory diets. There's actually a diet out there called AIP, an anti-inflammatory protocol. And what I would suggest if you want resources that are trustworthy is you go to places like the Mayo Clinic and Kaiser and some of the big healthcare, you know, systems to get some of that information, and that you also find a registered dietitian. You can actually go to eatright.org and put in a search. And now that things are more remote, you actually can see dietitians and talk with dietitians, not just here, which we have great ones here too. But if other ones can better suit your needs or whatever, we have now access to people all over the country because of the way things are going here in the pandemic. It is confusing, but there is a standard AIP protocol, an anti-inflammatory protocol that you would go through, because what you're trying to identify is for you as an individual, are there particular foods that for me trigger more inflammation? So we don't all respond the same way to dairy. So someone with dairy is a higher likelihood of having inflammation, but that's not true for everybody. And so what this AIP protocol does is it helps you identify individually for you, what do I respond well to, what don't I respond well to, and that way I don't have to cut something out of my diet that I really enjoy that's unnecessary to cut out. But the things that are really causing issues, I can identify that very quickly. I can get that out of my diet immediately, so see some benefits of it. And when you see benefits, you no longer want to eat it because it really causes you pain and inflammation. And so there are some general things that can help omega-3s, but if you respond poorly to certain things that have omega-3s, that's not going to work. So I really recommend talking with someone who is trained in that, going to trustworthy sources, trying this protocol, and also integrative medicine practitioners are really good with anti-inflammatory protocols, which some other doctors that don't do that type of practice, it will just put you on medication and really not necessarily address those dietary issues. So that was a great question.
Thank you so much for your question, Linda. On that topic of our diet, with so much focus on our supply chain issues right now and the pandemic and the need to really take care of ourselves, it seems to be there's a larger focus on that. And of course, diet's such a big part of our overall health. How do you see this moment really playing a role in us recognizing what types of foods we're eating and where we're getting that food? Do you think this is a moment where people may be more conscious or becoming more conscious of that?
I think it really just depends. I think that the supply chain issues are really making it clear how important being local is from that perspective. The more local you can keep things and have more resources available to you locally, we don't have as many supply chain issues where we're depending on things coming from so far away to really eat or even survive and drive or do any of the things that we're doing. So I think that's one aspect of it, because obviously if we stay more local, you don't have the supply chain issues, but then you also have a lower carbon footprint there. You know, you're giving business to local people. And I think that there's just a lot to that. I think for other people who are food insecure, maybe they're going to see it very differently. We have a lot of food insecure people here in our own community. And when you have these supply chain issues and you don't have systems in place to be able to live off of what you have locally, I think this is huge, because the inequities that were already there become much greater and much more apparent. And that is a concern I have as a person who lives in this community, who's also a dietitian. I don't want to see anybody food insecure. And I think that just makes that worse. So those people aren't going to be thinking about health or wellness, because maybe not that they're not thinking about that, but it's less of a priority than just getting food to begin with. And so I think it's an unreasonable expectation to expect someone who is food insecure to also be thinking about health and wellness. It's just too much. We've got to start somewhere. And that is a basic need, to just have enough to be able to support the activities that you're doing. And then I think people who maybe aren't as affected by supply chain issues, we know that there is inequities, right? So there are people who are not going to be as affected, have the luxury, honestly, to decide whether they want to focus on health and wellness or not. And I think that some people are more focused on it because the COVID exposed that people who were less healthy to begin with, or people that carried excessive weight, or people that had certain conditions, were more susceptible to, you know, more sickness and death. And I have worked with clients locally. I work with a lot of people in Juarez who really started to become healthy and take notice of their weight or their diabetes, because they all of a sudden felt this fire under them that they were scared, and they had a reason to do it. Now, whether fear translates to sustainable behavior, that's another question. So normally when we do things out of fear, it's short-lived. And so what I hope is that fear can translate into opportunity. So I started these new health behaviors out of fear, but now I do it because I see the benefits and it makes me feel good, and I see all of these great things that come from it.
You're listening to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media. The number to call to ask your question is 575-646-2212. You can also join in the conversation on our Facebook page, where Claude sent a comment saying, quote, "I think we should really turn everything off for a while rather than cramming so much to avoid boredom. The virus has given us a chance to be better, but we seem to be stuck in the old mold. Things will never be the same anymore. The shell of the past is broken. Let's become better humans who are truly free at last. Let freedom ring. Thanks for the comment there, Claude. Raquel, your thoughts on this moment where we're at right now? I mean, you faced COVID. It's impacted your family. You know, many people are dealing with it right now. And the ripple effects of it as well. We're seeing in our medical community, we're seeing a lot of people face many challenges because many hospitals are short-staffed and due to COVID-19. The impact there, and it's touching really every part of our society. So at this moment, how do we look forward and have a positive outlook?
You know, I think it's very similar to when somebody goes through a trauma or something tragic or loss or anything along those lines. You know, I think COVID is a worldwide trauma is what I'm going to call it. Nobody will leave this pandemic unscathed, not one person in some way, shape or form. And when we go through those moments, it is a moment. I'm going to agree with Claude. I mean, I love what Claude, it was Claude, right, that wrote that comment in, because we're trying to fix perhaps new problems in old ways. You know, we're relying on these coping mechanisms maybe that didn't serve us before and they're not going to serve us now. And it is this opportunity to sit with it. You know, we're sitting here going, how do we not have trauma? How do we not have sadness? How do we just get the economy going? And that's great. But if we don't learn from this and take actions based on what we learn, it's going to happen again and again and again. It won't be a COVID. It'll be the next thing and the next thing. And what's true about this is sometimes we have to be miserable and sometimes we have to sit in that misery or that silence or that despair just enough to learn something, about ourselves, to learn something about the world around us, the people around us, so that we can then take new actions and have new ideas for what we do after this. And as hard as that sounds, because I don't want it to sound like, listen, I want you to sit in your misery and just wallow. That's not what I'm saying. But if we just watch constant Netflix shows to try to distract ourselves from that, we also miss out on an opportunity to discover something and learn. And all of this is information from us, for us, that we can learn from. What we're seeing in healthcare workers, if healthcare systems do not change the way that they do things, it's going to be a travesty from the perspective that if they're trying to go back to what they were doing before, shame on all of them. And I'm just going to say that because I worked in healthcare for such a long time. Shame on you.
Okay, well, let's talk.
This should show you how to do things in new ways.
Let me ask you, though, like, you mentioned this, you know, kind of with the broad stroke, but what are the specific things that you've learned through your experience in working in healthcare that healthcare practitioners can take notice and adapt and change?
Well, first of all, we cannot expect healthcare workers to work the way that they're working and be able to be good healthcare workers. Like, and I know that they're good skill-wise. I'm not implying that they're not good. What I'm saying is that they cannot emotionally and mentally do this for sustainable amounts of time and not have damage occurring to them. And that's not sustainable. And this was happening before COVID. This was happening, you know, in the 90s when I worked in healthcare. You can't have people who haven't slept go and do the things that they're doing in healthcare. You can't have silos and systems and processes that are clunky and inefficient and not productive. You cannot have healthcare that's not patient-centric, that's not customized, that's not personalized to that person's needs. That was incorrect before, but it's exposing even more so now from a worker's perspective, from a treatment perspective, that cannot continue. And so if we're not using this, and I'll give you an example. I offered myself to a local healthcare system to help out and not even charge for my services to help alleviate some of the issues that they were having of not being able to refer, not being able to send patients. And they didn't even want my help. They are so sometimes arrogant, or I don't know what it is, or stuck in their way of doing things. They're not even open to the possibility of doing something differently. And it's very, very disappointing.
You're listening to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media, brought to you by Oregon Mountain Solar and Amador Health Center. The number to call to ask your question is 575-646-2212. We're talking about wellness this hour, about 20 minutes left in the program. So call in and ask your question. Time's running out. You can also join in the conversation on our Facebook page where a lot of folks are. I want to talk with you about mental health. There's been so much stories, reporting done, especially with high-profile athletes who have spoken out against the issue and withdrawn from major competitions like the Olympics or a major tennis match. We've seen athletes really be vocal about this issue. At this moment when the spotlight is being turned on mental health, what are some things that you think we need to pay attention to? I say this, let me just give you some data from the Kaiser Family Foundation that was taken this fall from the end of September to early October. Nearly 32% of adults in New Mexico reported symptoms of anxiety and or depressive disorder compared to about 31.6% of adults in the U.S. So, I mean, a little bit high, tiny bit higher there. So some concerns about this issue because it is a major issue in New Mexico. If you look at our suicide rates and our overdose deaths rates, those are very concerning numbers. So when we think about our mental health, what are some things that we can do to make sure to check in with our mental health and see that we're good?
Yes, I think first of all, it's recognizing signs in yourself that you're not okay. And that's not an easy thing to do because nobody likes to feel vulnerable or weak. And so I think that those numbers are actually underrepresenting what people are actually experiencing, because there are a lot of people that are in fight or flight, and because they show up to work every day and they perform and they deliver, they don't perceive that they're in this anxiety state or just going through the motions and, you know, those sorts of things. But I think that, again, self-care. Self-care from the perspective, are you doing things to have fun? Are you doing things that, do you have moments in your day in which you have nothing scheduled? Do you have moments of stillness? Do you have moments in which you just laugh and you feel relaxed and you're connecting with people? I mean, these are some of, again, those basic needs that we have as human beings. We need to have fun and pleasure in our lives. We need to have opportunities to move and exercise. If we choose not to, that's our choice. But if we don't even feel like we have the opportunity to do that, that's a big problem. If we don't feel like we have the opportunity to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep, which is what our system requires, that's an issue as well. And that's why we put a lot of responsibility on people, right? We're like, you individually, you need to go eat well and go exercise and get enough sleep. But we don't realize the impact that work and society and everything else, even school and being a parent of kids, has on our ability to actually go exercise and eat well and get enough sleep. You know, so there's a cumulative, or I don't know, responsibility from all of us to help each other to do that and to support and nurture each other through that process. So it's, I think, pausing enough to recognize, you know what, I'm not okay, or I'm self-neglecting, or I feel like I just can't have fun anymore. What can I do? What do I need? And not let it get to the point where you feel like there's already clinical symptoms and signs. And this is our society. We wait until someone's at a point in which they need treatment versus really providing resources and things to people and strategies and a community in which they can just be well, you know, from the very beginning.
Well, how can somebody approach their employer and let them know that they need a mental health day? What are some ways that somebody can do that and have a positive outcome?
I think it's just simply expressing that. It's finding a way to say, I want to be here. I want to do good work. But I can't. I literally cannot, because my mind, my emotions, and not to feel weak because of it. Not if you perceive that you're not going to get a favorable response from your employer, that you need help and that you need a day off, then that employer doesn't deserve you. I mean, I know that that's easy to say when you need a job, but this is exactly why we get into these situations where employers can be abusive and where employers can take advantage of situations. So you need to express that. And if those needs aren't being met, it's now what do I do? Do I, you know, go to human resources? But we all as employees need to express to our employer, boss, however that looks for you, what it is that you need to be able to be your best. Because I can tell you, because I work with HR and senior leaders and CEOs, nobody wins when somebody's not feeling their best and when somebody is not emotionally well, and everybody loses. And so when we can move to a place where everybody feels well, or when they don't feel well, that they feel honored and they feel like they have resources for that, everybody wins. And so there is no downside to it. And so I think that, once again, I go back to this notion of self-authority. Everybody has the right to know themselves, trust themselves, and express themselves authentically. And use that voice that you have. It doesn't matter where you work and what position you're in. Use your voice to express your needs. And do not be afraid to be vulnerable or look weak or to be ashamed of those sorts of things. We need to break those stigmas. We need to break the stigma that asking for help is not correct. We need to break that stigma that if I need support, that there's something wrong with me, that I'm not complete. So those are just such critical human needs. We can't ignore those.
Do you feel that businesses are becoming more aware of this at this time? Organizations or people who are employing workers are becoming more conscious of this at this time?
They are. So I'm in those conversations. The research is really, really clear. The Great Resignation data is very clear. I think that's what's hard. And I don't want to just blame people in HR, leaders, or an organization or culture, is that it's hard. And when something is hard and it's multidimensional and it involves different aspects of an organization, the easiest thing to do is to go back to what you've been doing before, or to wait for someone else to do something about it. And that's what I see a lot of. I see a lot of, I get it and I know it. We don't have the budget to fix it. Or, we've got to meet these immediate needs from a revenue perspective, or we're going to close down. And so organizations are in fight or flight, and they're doing instant gratification, which means that they're losing sight of the big picture. And so what I would say is that what we need a lot of is compassion and grace to ourselves, to our family, to our friends, to our community, and to businesses who are struggling. They know they need to change, but it's not easy, and it's hard to do that while making revenue and keeping everybody employed at the same time. So if we can show compassion and grace, but agree that what we're doing isn't working, and that we do want to make a change, that's, I think, the first step. Being in denial about it doesn't help, and just brushing it off and dumping it on somebody else doesn't help. And so I think that that's where I am. That's why I was so disappointed in this healthcare system, that, it was like, I'm not demanding anything. I'm just saying, let's explore options that could be sustainable in the future. And if we're not open to that as people and a community, we're in big trouble.
Well, I want to, since you brought up a healthcare system, I want to bring forward a question from our Facebook page from Laura, who asks, how close are our healthcare workers to demanding a system that begins with lifestyle medicine in contrast to just treating symptoms? That's Laura's comment and question on our Facebook page. Your thoughts on that?
It's hard for me to say where we are and how close we are, because our healthcare system is dictated by a lot of forces, whether it's insurance companies, whether it's what's federal and what's state and what's local. I mean, there's a lot of policy, there's just a lot of muddling around. But I'm writing right now an article that's going to be published around what are future healthcare trends for 2023. And one of the things that I'm writing about in there is that if we don't move to lifestyle medicine and we don't move to prevention, and we don't figure out how to unlock that, and we keep using this system of rewarding on the back end of when people are sick, we're going to have a collapse of some sort, whether it's a health collapse, whether it's an economic type. It's not sustainable, and everybody loses. And it's just like COVID, that crosses borders, this crosses borders as well. It has global implications. And so I think we're far away from it from a policy and systems perspective, because there are a lot of hands in the pot, right? And a lot of competing interests. But I think that we're in a better place because more patients are demanding it, and it's becoming more economical that more people are able to actually just go and pay for that on their own. It's becoming cheaper to just say, I'm not going to be part of this system. I'm going to create my own system. And that's part of what COVID is allowing to happen, because I can go see, I'm seeing somebody in Ecuador who's doing some hypnosis with me, and I can do that because of the pandemic. And so people will go and seek out what they need, and that's going to become cheaper and cheaper over time. And some of the systems that right now refuse to change will not be around in 10 years. So
you're listening to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media. We're talking about wellness with Dr. Raquel Garcon. You can call this number to ask your question or share your comment with us, 575-646-2212, or share your question or comment on our Facebook page. We're actually on Facebook Live right now, so you can you see us and join in the conversation there as well. I want to talk with you about something that's made a lot of news over the past year in New Mexico, and that is that adult use cannabis is going to be legal in the state in New Mexico. What are your thoughts about this, and do you have any concerns about this becoming legal, or some things to think about as this becomes legal for retail use in our area?
I mean, I think there's just so much to talk about that's like, let's, you know, talk about world peace, you know. If I focus in on it from a health perspective, so if I can keep it on wellness and health, I think that there are pros and cons. You know, I have a medical marijuana card. I have lupus. I have peripheral neuropathy. I have things that, and I am a new user that I really didn't know that medical marijuana could help me with. And I can tell you that it helps me more than a lot of the treatments I've received from traditional medicine in the past. And I'm just going to be honest. And I am a person who's been in healthcare and knows a lot. I just had no idea how much this was going to help me to be able to function and do things on a daily basis, which I think is huge. The autonomy to be able to do the things that I want to in my life. And the fact that medical marijuana has unlocked more capabilities for me, from just going to kickboxing and being able to feel my feet to being able to perhaps take on my first marathon. My goal is to do my first marathon this year for the baton. And when I turn 50 this year, as a 50-year-old with lupus and peripheral neuropathy, the fact that medical marijuana can help me with that. How many other people could benefit from a health perspective, anxiety, trauma, PTSD, all of these things who just haven't gone to get approval from a medical perspective? So from that perspective in health, I don't want someone necessarily telling me that I can't get access to something that is in fact helping me. Obviously, there are people who are going to use it who don't necessarily get any health benefits, and there could be cons to that, but I don't feel like we should control that. This is where autonomy comes into play, and autonomy is a human need. And when we can give people information so that they can make choices for themselves based on that, we're better as people. And so sometimes we pick the wrong things that aren't good for us. And that's true of legal, illegal. It doesn't matter what it is. Alcohol's legal and there's lots of problems with it, but it can also be used responsibly and it also has health benefits. And so I don't really see it as any different than caffeine, which can be also very negative for certain people, but also can be positive. And so alcohol, I think, and marijuana, I think from that perspective, if I'm only speaking on health and wellness, if we can't meet the needs of people with our resources for helping them through trauma and some of the things that they've experienced, the least we can do is allow them to have access to an herb that might help them through that. That's how I see it. Because yesterday I encountered a homeless person and really tried to help them and called around and tried to place them somewhere because they were older, they were sick, and they needed help. And I couldn't find a place to help that person in that moment. And that is not okay with me. So. Yeah.
You're listening to Be Well with Raquel here on KRWG Public Media. We have just a few minutes left. If you want to ask your question or share your comment with us, 575-646-2212. We do have a caller. Patty's on the line. Patty, thank you for joining us here on KRWG Public Media. Do you have a question for Raquel? Hello, Patty. Patty, are you there? All right. Well, we'll ask Patty to call back here on Be Well with Raquel. But I want to move on. This time of the year, gyms are packed. A lot of people are going to the gym to try to physically get in better shape. A lot of people may not be going to the gym as well because of COVID concerns and are looking for other ways to stay active. What are your thoughts on how we can implement a really sustainable, healthier fitness lifestyle to stay active throughout the year instead of, you know, traditionally we hear
the new year.
The new year, exactly. Get past this 2 months where a lot of folks, you know, they drop out. It happens. So what are some suggestions you have so people can implement a sustainable, active lifestyle?
Make sure that you're working out for the right reasons, you know, that you're not punishing yourself, that it's not because someone told you, that it's truly for you, because of the vision that you have for yourself and how you want your life to be. So make sure that you are doing that for the right reasons. Number two is to do things that you enjoy, that somehow you feel are helping you to grow or learn about yourself, you know, that somehow tap into passion or your competitive side, something that is inspiring to you versus trying to just pretend I'm not doing it, distract myself because it's torture. You know, that's just not sustainable for anything. So it's, how can I find a way to make this fun and enjoyable from an intrinsic perspective for me? And how can I maybe tie it to community, connecting with people, feeling like I belong or I'm included? How can we tie it to the basic human needs, which is to feel included and belong and cared about and valued and I'm growing and those sorts of things? Or at least take the workouts that you're doing and translate that to your life. I realize that when I work out, even though it sucks and I don't like it, it makes me a better communicator or a better mom, or I have more energy, or it's easier to do these things in my everyday life. So just finding a way to connect it to a bigger, broader picture, I think is probably the most sustainable way to do anything in our lives.
So working out, fitness, it's a booming industry. There's a lot of money into it. People spend a lot of money on personal trainers or going to gyms or joining a group. Now, what are some questions that people could ask before they join this group or this gym to or take on a personal trainer to make sure that it's really right for them?
Yeah, I think it's really understanding, you know, what it's like a business. What are my objectives? What am I trying to do? And then asking questions around that. So if it is for more social types of support, you want to make sure this is not an environment in which people are screaming at you and telling you that you're slacking and lazy in order to motivate you, unless that's what you like, you know. So you want to find an environment that has the right type of motivation for you. I don't like to get screamed at and yelled at and told that I'm not doing enough. That's just not inspiring to me. If I'm going to do that, I want to do that in my own head, right? My own way. I want to feel like I am allowed to do things to, you know, so you have to find for you what you're looking for. I took up mountain biking for the first time during the pandemic. And apart from the mountain biking itself, one of my favorite things about mountain biking is how people really make me feel. They make me feel nurtured and supported. And when I fall or crash or make a mistake, they're so encouraging and coaching, and they never look down. There's just so much more to it than the actual biking, right? And so what you want to do is ask the questions or notice the type of people or how they behave to say, does this align? What I would ask is, can I attend a few times without paying or committing so that I can see if this is the right environment for me? And if you have to sign your life away before you even seen anything, that's danger, right? Like, you want to be able to experiment and see if that's right for you before you make a commitment. I think that's really, really important.
Okay, we just have a couple of minutes left. The number 575-646-2212 to ask your question to Dr. Raquel Garzon here on Be Well with Raquel. I did have one more question. A lot of folks join challenges during this time of year, weight loss challenges or healthy challenges. Your thoughts on these challenges, and do they really work? Or what are some things to point out for folks to make sure that they're finding the right one for them?
Okay, so I don't want to be black and white about this, so I'm not going to be, but here's what I will say. I discourage challenges from employers, and the reason is that it always has a group of people feeling excluded. So from an employer perspective, I can talk more about that to specific employers if you want to talk to me about that. The research is very clear. It's challenges create very short-term behavior that oftentimes is not good behavior. So, but for some select people, the challenge is the first step and push that they need to then establish for themselves a new way of doing things, meaning that it's breaking a paradigm, it's breaking old patterns. Or the challenge created a new support system for me because I met people, and after the challenge was over, I stayed in contact with those people I connected with, and we continued to do the things that we thought were useful to us, that we enjoyed, things along those lines. But I would be careful, because a lot of times what challenges produce is short-term bad behavior, if that makes sense. And of course, I could talk a lot more about that, but there's a lot of research on it, and it's an easy to do, check the box, that has a lot of bad consequences. So,
okay. Now we just have about a minute left, but I'd like to give you a chance to kind of leave us with some thoughts as we move into this new year. And what are some things that we need to consider in order to achieve our goals and be aware of taking care of ourselves?
I really think that the best advice I can give people is to honor yourself. And that means to get to know yourself better. That means all of you, all parts. Trust yourself that you are enough, you are who you are supposed to be, and that you are able to express yourself and your needs to others. And when you can meet your basic needs of safety, rest, and sleep, nourishing and moving, being included and providing value, your life will fall into place.
Dr. Raquel Garzon, thank you so much for joining us here on Be Well with Raquel. This is KRWG Las Cruces and KRXG Silver City. It's 201.